Now, to reestablish our lines for you, directly behind you is Jackson's line. Directly in front of you are Captain Griffin's guns. Now, this is a great position for Captain Griffin to have. This is called an enfilade fire, which means that Captain Griffin should be able to fire down the side of Jackson's line, hitting his flank, and do all kinds of damage. Well, unfortunately, he would only manage to get off about two rounds when to his front, he would see a line of infantry starting to move towards him. Well, Captain Griffin would very quickly order his guns turned. He ordered them loaded with canister. Now, canister is a can about this big. It's full of little round balls. When you fire your cannon, it acts like a giant shotgun, and it is devastating to a line of infantry. So Captain Griffin has his guns up. He's about to give the command to fire. Now I want all of you to try and imagine that you're with that infantry unit. This right here is the view you have, looking directly down the muzzles of those guns. You're standing here in two straight lines, shoulder to shoulder, not with strangers. You're all from the same area. You're probably there with friends and family members. And you're gonna keep marching directly into those guns. And while you're doing that, you're watching one man in particular. See, every man on that gun crew is facing forward and making eye contact with you, except for one. There is one man off to the side of that gun, down in this position, holding a lanyard. And he's looking to the rear of the piece, because as soon as he gets the command to fire, he's going to snap his wrist back, firing the cannon, and a whole portion of your line is going to cease to exist. And even though you know that, you're going to continue to march directly into those guns. Well, today, that infantry unit would luck out totally. Because just as Captain Griffin is about to give the command to fire, Major Barry rides up. And Major Barry is in charge of all Union artillery. And he tells Captain Griffin, don't fire on those men. Those are your battery support. Well, Captain Griffin very quickly turns and says, those are Confederates. Sure as the world, those are Confederates. Well, unfortunately, a major outranks a captain. So Captain Griffin was forced to turn his guns back. He's preparing to resume fire down Jackson's line, but he's nervous. He's keeping his eye on that infantry. Well, that infantry would march up, get to within 80 yards, lower their muskets and fire a withering volley directly into Captain Griffin's crews. Now, he would end up losing so many men, and more importantly, so many horses, that he was forced to abandon his guns and run from the field. After the battle, he would describe it by saying, that was the last of us. Now, that unit that came out of the woods here, that was the 33rd Virginia. So now, I'm sure some of you are wondering, how could you have that kind of confusion? Like the rest of you, I was brought up with the idea, we're in the North, they're all wearing blue uniforms. And in the South here, they're all wearing gray uniforms. Didn't work out that way. At this particular battle here, you have 200 different uniforms represented. That's a lot of uniforms to be trying to keep track of. This little bit of confusion here, this is not the only time that that would occur. Throughout this battle, it would slow down and the fighting would almost stop because somebody would start yelling, you're firing on friends. So they would cease firing, they would talk to each other and try and find out what state they were from so they knew if they were supposed to keep killing them or not. So you have all this kind of confusion going on throughout this fight. And the taking of these guns, this is not the end of the battle. This becomes a turning point. Jackson's line, after seeing these guns captured, would rally and rush forward. They would then manage to capture Captain Ricketts' guns. Well, now you have a really fast-moving battle up here. The guns would end up switching hands several times, but they would switch hands so quickly that neither side would get a chance to simply pick them up and drag them from the field. Now, while this is going on, the Confederate line here is steadily getting stronger. They have reinforcements just pouring into the area. And they would steadily start to push forward. The Union Army would start to fall back. And finally, General McDowell was forced to give the command to retreat. Now, initially, they were falling back in relatively good order. Now, I know you all are waiting to hear about the routing And you did have some men who broke and ran and some regiments who broke and ran, but overall they were falling back in good order until they reached the Cub Run Bridge. The Cub Run Bridge was a very narrow suspension bridge. So you have this bottleneck forming of all these scared men waiting to get across. To add to that bottleneck, a supply wagon had broken down on the bridge. And of course, to add to the panic and the fear of these soldiers, every time anybody saw a horse, somebody would start screaming it was the Confederate cavalry coming to get them. So then you'd have a little heightened panic. What would finally lead to the all-out panic and routing of the Union Army? A Confederate artillery unit would manage to zero in directly on top of that bottleneck. Once you had shells exploding on top of these already scared men, all control was lost and they would break and run for it. Now, I know you all are waiting to hear about the civilians on the battlefield. There were none. There were no civilians on the battlefield. They came as far as the heights of Centerville, which are located 6 miles in that direction. They could see the smoke, they could hear the sounds, but they probably could not actually see the battle taking place here because they were too far away. Now, once the army in their retreat reached Centerville, the civilians would get caught up in the retreat, but not in the initial part when they were leaving this area. Now, over at that other tree, I had started to tell you a little bit about what these soldiers were thinking coming into this fight, how they viewed it. Well, coming out of it, most of your soldiers here were just scared. This is not what they were basically expecting here. They had the idea again that they were going to come out here and look so good and be so intimidating, the other side's going to get scared and run away. Well, both sides would write about how impressed they were with the way that the other held their ground and actually fought them. Now, these men were also probably a little bit surprised to see the effect of the Minet ball and artillery fire on the human body. It was not the nice clean war that they were kind of hoping this would be. Now also here, these men now realize this wasn't going to be a quick war. This one battle wasn't really going to decide much of anything. Even the Confederates realized that by beating the North so badly, by humiliating them, all they had done was strengthen their resolve to fight harder. They weren't going to just quit and give up the fight. Now, one thing that is interesting about this battle here is both sides would get to feel the thrill of victory and the agony of defeat. Because remember, halfway through the day, the Union Army is celebrating. They've won. It's all over. You have Confederate troops running back across here telling their friends, "Don't bother. We've lost it already." And yet, within just a matter of hours, it would completely reverse itself. By the end of the day up here, you would have 3,500 casualties, 900 of which are dead. Now, if any of you have been to later battlefield sites, been over to 2nd Manassas, Antietam, Gettysburg, any of the really big battles, you would know that 3,500 casualties is nothing compared to what was to come. This would practically be considered a skirmish here. Now, by the end of the war, you would have 622,000 dead Americans. That is a lot of young men. Considering the size of our population at that time, that was a good percentage of it. To put it into a modern perspective for you folks, we would manage to achieve that number of dead U.S. servicemen again. In order to reach that, though, you have to add up all of those killed in World War I, World War II, Korea, and the first 4 years of Vietnam. Now, if you think about it, that means it took them 4 years to achieve what took us almost an entire century. So with that, I hope you all enjoy the rest of your visit here. And if you have any questions, please feel free to ask. Thank you.